Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Richard Porter.
And I'm Johnny Smith.
And this is Smith and Sniff, a podcast in which two friends talk about cars, and this week, the new Ford Bronco.
We had dinner with my sister-in-law, and she said, the astrological signs? I get astrology and astronomy mixed up. One of them's Bobbins, one of them's real.
Yeah, that's right.
Astrology is Bobbins.
Yes, and astronomy is the study of stars, which is not...
That's right. So apparently there's been a new, star constellation discovered a few days ago. And that means that, she said, that means all of the astrological signs are going to be out. That means you're no longer going to be a Pisces.
Oh, no.
And I said, what really does that mean? What am I now? And I think she might have got a bit mixed
Moulinex.
Up. Yes, exactly. So
Lytotes.
All I said was, hang on, does that mean Russell Grant's going to be furious? Because all of his archive is just down the toilet.
Is he still alive?
I think, I'd hate to talk about someone presuming that they're alive or they're not. Let me just check whether he's alive.
I mean, well, he would have foreseen his own death anyway, wouldn't he? Oh, no, wait, he wouldn't, because everything that he deals in is total horse shit. I forgot about that.
Russell Grant horoscopes. Well, he's still got a website, russellgrant.com /horoscopes. Gosh, that can't be his real website. That is awful. That's. It looks like it's just a festival of clip art.
Clip art.
Russell Grant. I'm just going to write Russell Grant dead in it. I don't think he's dead.
No, we'd have. I don't know. Would we have heard about it? Would we have been paying attention?
Yeah, because he used to be on like.
It wouldn't have made the evening news, would it? It just sort of wouldn't, unless there was a really slow news day.
It would have made morning television.
Oh, yeah. The 10 o'clock. It wouldn't make the 10 o'clock. The headlines tonight. The astronomer Russell Grant has died at the age of, I don't know.
There's the astrologer. That's it, not the astronomer.
Oh, gotcha.
That's
the thing,
because Patrick Moore would start spitting on him.
Yes. Patrick Moore is dead.
Patrick Moore is definitely dead. Why do we get mixed up with people who may or may not be dead sometimes? And there's always things that happen on Twitter and other social media where somebody just presumes somebody's dead and then it spreads within minutes.
Well, it's when somebody's name starts trending and your first thought is, oh, no, oh, no. Hmm. Like I saw not that long ago, David Attenborough started trending and I was like, no, 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 no. And thankfully it wasn't to do with him passing away. He's still with us.
You presumed it was death?
Yeah. Well, because he's quite elderly
Prince
now.
Philip.
Prince Philip.
Prince Philip's a prime example. I mean, in fact, this weekend just gone, I messaged you, didn't I? I went away with the family for a couple of days to the Norfolk coast. Mm. And we went past Sandringham, where old Phil the Greek did that amazing manoeuvre with his Land Rover Freelander.
Well, flipped his Freelander on its side.
Yeah, went past the lay-by, which I think should have a brass plaque at the side.
Does it not?
Well, I didn't see one. I'd love
or
it.
A beautifully rendered statue of a Freelander 2 on its side.
Oh, my gosh, that's what they should do.
The detail of the routing of the exhaust system on the underside is exquisite.
They should totally do... Why don't they just use a real one and then plant some really beautiful plants on it? Because Sandringham Estate's all very immaculate and leafy, that whole area is. So you could do one of those like sponsored roundabout statue type things. So it could be Phil the Greek's dead Freelander on its side with a load of colour-coded flowers. I'd quite like to see that.
Well, you should write to Norfolk County Council. I'm sure they'd love to hear from you.
I couldn't do that. I don't think I could do write to Norfolk County Council. I'd have too much to say.
I'd have about Norfolk in general?
Yeah, and we can't go down.
Point
there,
seven. Why are you so flat?
I mean, I saw a number of lotuses while I was over in the over the border. And what was that other car that I saw? I saw two interesting relics. One was the both X-Reg. One was modern X-Reg, which was a Nissan Primera in that colour flip. I think it was.
Oh, really? Well, bloody hell!
Yeah, it was. It had its hazards on.
That's a rarity.
Yeah, it had its hazard warning lights on outside a post office, and I'm certain the person ran in for cigarettes. And then I saw a really mint old X-Reg. So what'd that be? 82? A Toyota Crown.
Wow.
Driven by a pair of very old people. Obviously, they weren't both driving it. One of them was in the passenger seat. Otherwise, that would be a spectacle to behold.
One was doing the pedals.
Yeah.
And the other was doing the steering.
One's leg was just moving across the footwell and just doing like the clutch or the brake. Yeah.
Wow, a Toyota Crown.
Yeah, and it was mint. And it just burbled past on the seafront of Hunstanton. And I did a proper double take. I thought, oh, that's great.
Burbled past. Would that have had a straight thick in it?
I'm pretty sure it was a straight thick, yeah, because...
I think those were a straight thick, so...
I think they were. And that's the very silky, but probably not very fast kind of...
Oh, no. No. I mean, I reckon it's probably... Would it be like a sort of... I think it was the Nissan Laurel that had a 2.6 litre straight thick in it. But
yeah.
But for the sake of argument, let's say the Toyota Crown had like a 2.5 litre straight six, and I bet it was making 104 horsepower.
Oh, yeah. Well, what was the equivalent Granada V6 at the time? The Cologne?
Oh, yeah.
That was maybe 130 horse?
Yeah.
Something like that. You know, that was a 2.8.
Mm.
I like a very smooth, refined sounding, but ultimately not very powerful six. I quite like
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I know, because they're so smooth. That's it. I think that there's a sort of almost the more that they try, you try and wring out some power from them, it just somehow upsets the inherent smoothness and
just gets upset with you.
I slightly covet our neighbour's pretty tidy, not immaculate, but pretty tidy. BMW 320i. It's an E36.
I've seen it.
I've seen the green one.
Yeah, it's nice. Yeah. It's nice.
Yeah, yeah. You know the one I mean. And
yeah.
And it makes a lovely noise. That BMW straight six sounds nice. I mean, less of the smoothness, more of the sort of sportiness. But it's a 320, so what would that have had? Like 100 and, I don't know.
That's a good question. 150, maybe?
I was going to say 140. I'm not even sure. I'm sure someone listening will be furiously shouting, "Ugh, you idiots! It's 143. Ugh, how could you not know that?"
I like that, though. I liked it when BMWs did the small six.
A small six.
2 litre six is very sexy.
Hey, there's something I was going to tell you about. For the past 2 or 3 weeks, I've been haunted by an interesting sounding car. Like, I've been somewhere in the house and I've heard something go by it, and it's quite raspy.
Okay.
Quite a sort of, but with a bit of bass to it.
Yeah.
At the same time.
Yeah.
So it just sounds sporty, sporty sounding car, and I've heard it's going up our street. And every time I've tried to get to the front windows to see what it is, and I've just missed it. It's disappeared. And I'd be like, what is it? And why do I keep hearing it? Like, you know, when you're people like us and you're a bit peculiar, you know all your neighbours' cars and
you know
the sounds of them. There's no, so I know when the guy across the road starts that old 3 Series, I just know it's him. And the bloke down the street who's got that Golf R32, you know, I know that.
You know that.
The sound of that.
Cold start on an R32.
Yeah, very, quite gruff, but
yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
And his son's now got a current shape Mini Cooper S, and that makes, you know, sort of quite a fruity noise.
That's a bit raspy, probably on cold start.
It is, and it's very BMW-ish somehow. The noise it makes, it's sort of like you go, it feels like it's the distant relative, even though it's only a four-cylinder, of the old six-cylinder 3 Series. It's just got that, there's a bass to it.
I think they often intentionally loosen the exhaust shielding at the back. So there's always a tingly, tangly sound.
What do you mean?
The pinnacle of that was the M Sport... ETH 46 kind of 3 series, everything was so zingy and tingy. It was quite exciting. But it did sound like something was slightly loose. But I think probably factory
spec, it was deliberately just loose. It was designed that way. I guess those things, well, that's the thing. I thought sort of stuff calmed down a bit because noise regs probably got a bit tighter and all that sort of thing. So the mystery car, I finally... In fact, you know, the first time I ran to the front of the house, I saw what it was.
You know it.
Well, I saw what it was driving away, except I went, oh, well, it can't have been that. It must have been something else. The bloke at the end of the street has just got a new car. And it's a BMW 440i Grand Coupe.
Oh. Okay, so this is going to be...
The first time I saw it driving away, I was like, what? That can't be it. Because that's still a 6 in that car.
I was just about to say, this is where the badges get ultimately confusing, isn't it? So it's not going to be 4 litre.
No, it's...
Say it's a 6. You think it's a straight 6.
Well, it's a 3 litre... I'm saying this now with a sort of slightly misplaced confidence. No, I'm going to look this up to be sure.
I'm just doing the same because I don't want people to feel like we don't know anything.
It's a 3 litre straight 6 with a turbo on it. That would be my...
I feel like this is the first time in Smith & Sniff history where within 5 minutes of a podcast starting, we've mentioned cars which we just don't know the actual engine specs of. We didn't know the capacity of the Toyota Crown. We didn't really know the horsepower output of a 320 BM. I mean, we are losing our touch, Richard.
Here we go. Yeah, a 3 litre straight 6 producing 321 horsepower.
Can you buy a Grand Coupe with a V8 in it?
I don't think you can. Do you know what else? The BMW design has gone so absolutely cocking terrible recently that old... I mean, essentially, it's an outgoing car, isn't it? They won't be around for much longer, I would guess, because they're refreshing everything. But that current shape 4-series Grand Coupe with the most tacky stick-on badge in history on the rear side window that says Grand Coupe and just looks like something you've bought from Halfords. I don't know why they do that.
Oh, I don't know why they do that.
It's awful. But anyway, the rest of it, you sort of suddenly go, actually, in the context of what BMW are up to at the moment, it's not a bad-looking car.
Yeah.
It's actually quite tasteful compared to some of the absolute dog shit they've been turning out recently. But anyway, yeah, the first time I saw it driving up the street and I heard the noise, I was like, well, it can't have been that. It must have been something else has already gone. But then I heard it again and I went, and it was definitely that car. The guy, he lives at the end of my street, and I've only met him a few times, and he's an extremely serious man.
Is he?
Extremely serious. Yeah, I've never seen him smile. He's a very serious man. And
okay.
It's funny because he lives at one end of the street. The other end of the street, there's another very serious man.
You're bookended by seriousness.
I've managed to make the very serious man at the far end of the street laugh once with a joke about my dog that I made in conversation. And he actually went and smiled. And I was like, aha, I've cracked you.
Oh, that's good. You broke the ice there.
The guy at the top end of the street, so serious. And so the reason I bring this up is because he's bought the 440. He had a 5 series, an old shape 5 series before that. He's just chopped in the 5 for this 440. First of all, I was like, well, you know, fair play. He's gone for quite a spicy engine in that.
Yeah, he has.
I wonder if he got a deal. It seems is there a hidden unseriousness underneath him that he likes secretly going for a little bit of a drive? But then it's like, the noise that car's making, is he setting off in sport mode? Because that's not a very serious man thing to do either.
No. Is it like Mercedes, where I think if you leave it in sport, doesn't it start back up in sport? It doesn't reset.
Oh, I don't know.
I know some manufacturers, when you leave it in it, it bloody stays in it because some people get cross about it resetting. Or if you turn the car off for more than an hour, it fully resets. But if you say stop the car, go to the shop, get back in the car, it still is in spolt mode or whatever.
But yeah, that's...
You know what I mean? It doesn't do a full software reset.
Yes, and I think you're right. I feel like BMWs do that.
Maybe he doesn't know.
Maybe he doesn't know. He thinks it's just jammed in that mode. He just doesn't know.
Or he's sellotaped the button down because he's like, I've bought a car like this. I'm not driving it in any other way apart from the M Sport mode. And that's it. It's a super aggressive everything. He wants really aggressive throttle inputs.
Well, maybe that's it. Maybe he's such a serious man that he wants the car to feel extremely serious and as if it's coiled and ready for action at all times, and so that's sport mode. A mate of mine's just bought a car, and he was going, it's got sport mode. I've never had a sport mode before. And I said, have you used it? And he went, well, I put it in it once when I drove it away from the dealer, and then went, oh, I don't like that, and put it back in. I was like, that's as much as you'll ever use the sport mode, trust me. But another friend of mine who's got a Discovery Sport as their family car sent me a message the other day. He went, I've been so bored in lockdown, I put my car in sport mode.
I've got a method of how to break the seriousness of The Serious Man, the book, one of them, Bookending Your Street. Yeah. What I would do is I would make a point of trying to bump into him as he goes out of his front door or to his car, and just be super, super smiley and really energetic and just...
Oh, I've tried that.
Just totally wax lyrical about his car. Just go, I didn't realise this was your car. I've been admiring it. It's absolutely wonderful. What a fantastic choice. Just be so gushy that it'll either scare the absolute... bejesus out of him, or he'll open up like a butterfly from a chrysalis.
Yeah. Oh no, God! But then he might become like, where he won't leave me alone because he just wants to talk about cars all the time.
Yeah, but he might be. He might be a car bore, but he might be good.
But I have just tried being pleasant to him as I walk by. Sometimes he's coming out of his house. I'm walking by with a dog, and I'll go, "Hello, good morning," and he always just goes, "Hello," in the most serious manner that it's possible to express. It's extraordinary how serious he really is.
I have a problem with the other way around. Often people latch on, and it's usually when I'm in a bit of a rush and I've got to crack on, and they want to just... They're obviously having a slow day, which is great for them. It's fantastic for them.
That chap we met with a BMW i3 in a hotel car park.
Oh, yeah. He was a nice guy.
Nice guy, but he was obviously not in a super big rush, and we kind of were. And
he
was very keen to chat at length. And it's hard to...
I've got his business card on my desk, actually.
Have you?
Yeah, it's just here. Yeah.
But it's very hard to go, mate. Just...
It's
you've had your time, now go.
I think it's the hardest thing in my adult life is knowing how to cut conversations short when I really have to get on. Without it sounding rude, honestly, because I don't know how to do it, and it's a bit of a bone of contention between me and my wife, because my wife will just go, "Look, I'm a bit busy, so I'm going, bye," and that's as quick as she'll do it, and I can't do it. I just can't do it, and it's a really important trait that I just don't have.
Well, I feel I'm probably the same as you. I mean, I get approached by far fewer people because, you know, you get recognised, don't you, and people come up and want to have a good old chat. But
a bit, how are you? Not massively, but...
How are you at leaving parties and things? Does it take you a very long time?
It does. But what I've tried to do... I mean, I don't really get invited to that many parties anymore, sadly. I'd like to, so I put a call out for some party invites. But what I tend to do is I tend to make sure I've drunk a lot more. And then I'll just stomp out and wave at, say, two select people, and don't give it a second thought. Whereas if I'm sober and I leave the party, I feel like I owe it to everybody in the room, maybe, to just kind of sign off.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. You've got to do it. You've got to. It's a whole ceremony, basically, isn't it?
It is.
Okay. Give me that. Yeah. Oh, hey. Oh, good luck with And you just And my wife's always despairing about it. She's like, she'll come up to me and go,
"I'm going."
Right, I'm thinking we probably should go. So if you could start saying goodbye now, we should be out of here in 45 minutes.
Like, is that what she said? Like,
and then, yeah, and then an hour later, I'm still going, "Hey, don't be a stranger." There is something quite thrilling, though, about just fucking off. We just fucked off from our own wedding reception, which was extremely...
Hang on, I was there, but I was...
I know,
I
but
was
do you
drunk.
Remember when we left?
I no,
you don't,
I don't.
Because
I don't.
We
I was
just
drunk.
Fucked off. It was winding up. I mean, basically, they'd stopped serving and we were being thrown out anyway. And then my wife and I just went, should we just go?
I was talking to somebody about cars and fire breathing.
Anyway, I realised before we went on this long and winding road conversationally, the thing I was going to raise with you right at the top of the show was...
Yeah.
What do you think of the new Ford Bronco?
I'm very excited. I think it looks cracking. I think I think they've done what Ford can do and has done in the past. They've just made something feel so desirable, but yet with a very reasonable price tag.
Yeah.
And suddenly you want to be in the club.
Well, Ford's always been king of the trimmings, hasn't it? You know, in Europe and the UK, certainly, it's like they were absolute masters of, you know, that hierarchy of ranges, you know, in the Cortina or the Escort or something like that. And just putting on, you know, the Escort XR3 was, when it came out, was not all that by all accounts. But it looked sensational, and that's what they're very good at, just looking. But it was also at a reasonable price, and I think that's probably true in the US as well. Because that new Bronco, like engineering-wise, there's nothing particularly exciting about it. It's a body on frame.
It's got Dana axles.
Yeah, and I mean, it's got that seven-speed manual. But it's really, it's a six-speed with then a super low crawler gear, isn't it? So in everyday life, if you're just driving on the road, you will just drive it like a six-speed, and then it's got a sort of dog-leg crawler on it, which is
quite cool, actually.
Good idea.
Yeah, it's quite practical.
There's no sort of radical engineering in it. It's a metal body dropped on a big chassis, and that's fine. It's fit for purpose. But what I think they've done very well is it's the design and the... It's one of those cars where it feels like they've really gone to town, and that the creatives and the people who cared passionately about it have beaten the accountants into submission.
Yeah, they've led it throughout.
It feels like it's got a good sort of a degree of passion to it. And cars like that are always quite desirable, aren't they?
Because
you go, it looks like the people who made this really cared.
Yeah.
And really put heart and soul into it. And, you know, I'm sure at some point somebody in finance went, right, you want to have removable doors.
And
it's really important to us to have that. And I'm like, okay, but you also want to have an option where there's a door with a big hole cut in it. Yeah, we do want that. But that's, I mean, we'll have to do different tooling for that. I mean, that's just going to add cost. Yeah, well, we really want to do it. Do you have to? Yes. And it's sort of stuff like that where you imagine that, knowing that Ford is a huge sort of corporate behemoth, and that the inertia that comes with a company of that size and the sort of reluctance to do things that are not necessarily the most profitable but are nice and will be nice for the consumer. It's, I think, really hard to get stuff like that pushed through, and it feels like that's what the Bronco is. It's a monument of people just giving a shit and trying really hard to make it as interesting as possible, and that's why it's desirable.
I'm with you.
It's not going to be sold in the UK. I sort of feel it's probably scaled to the US, and that it's going to be, it would feel very big over here and a bit sort of brash and American. But in the US, that will just sit perfectly in any landscape, and it's quite cool.
I think it's brilliant. Someone, I read on social media maybe 2 days ago, whenever it was, somebody said, there's going to be an electrified version. And I've scoured trying to find if this is the case. I don't think it is confirmed, but I'd love it to be. I mean, bloody hell, if they could put Mach-E battery packs in it and have it as a four-wheel drive, pure off-road looking EV, then I'm in.
Mm.
I think it picks up the reins where the FJ Cruiser left off. I know we seem to spend every podcast casually mentioning the FJ Cruiser, and I don't find
it's only one or two, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I do have a real thing for them, but of course, we never got it over here. And
that's a good point, actually. I hadn't thought about that, but it is, because it's sort of, it's retro enough, but it doesn't
feel...
It's
not painfully retro.
Totally navel-gazing. Because here's a thing that I was looking at the Bronco the other night, and then I was sort of just doing a bit of, you know, peripheral rabbit hole internet looking. The design of this new one is inspired by the original 60s Bronco, which to me was always a very gawky looking car because a track looked too narrow. And the new one, the track is wider than the body. It's got these bloody great arch extensions on it because it's so wide, and that's, you know, looks so much better for it. After that, Broncos were just sort of generic Ford trucks, whatever the sort of in-house style for their F-150s and all their other sort of, you know, the Explorers and Expeditions and things that came along. The Bronco just looked like those. It wasn't an exceptional-looking car. It was really I think, quite generic and of its time.
Always, I think, comically short wheelbase for the width and the the ruggedness of it. You always went, "Oh, are you sure it should be that short?" I always love that. I mean, I guess it's good for off-roading with not very many overhangs and all that stuff, but.
Mm.
I do really. I think that they've done a brilliant job from what I can see and from what I've read. I'm glad because, you know, Ford have spent a while doing average things, and a lot of the things they have brought out have not felt passionate. I mean, the Mach-E has got a lot of passion behind it and obviously a lot of investment. And the Mustang is great, but there's only a certain number of kind of special edition Mustangs you can see. And also, you know, numbers of YouTube videos where they're crashing.
But, yeah, obviously. I mean, that's the Mustang's main job, isn't it? To lose control outside of a car meet. That's what it's there for. But
They're bringing out a special edition. It's called the Shelby Car Show Crash.
Yeah,
and it's what it tends to do. It's got line lock, but the line lock's really temperamental. It's not entirely going to tell you what it's going to do. So what it wants you to do is just mash the throttle, and it will decide when it releases and when it doesn't. Yeah. You just have to ride it out.
You touch the throttle, and which would at a rate that would normally sort of input a sort of 20% throttle opening, but the ECU will then decide how much it actually opens the throttle electronically, anywhere between 50 and 100%. You don't know. At the same time, due to advances in steering technology now, which you usually used to sort of auto-correct for crosswinds and stuff like that, but on this Mustang, what it does is your inputs are then often massively magnified, so it becomes a full flailing and sawing at the wheel, so you get your signature double one way, other way, final flick into
windscreen wipers,
and then windscreen wipers. Oh yeah.
Of course.
Now you can, if you're a purist, just hope that your flailing accidentally triggers the wipers in the accepted style that we talked about the other week.
Yeah,
if you're a bit of a newcomer to this sort of stuff, then you can set in the central control screen so that during the loss of control the car will put its own wipers on automatically, to just to make sure you get that full loss of dignity without having to think about it.
Is it called the Shelby Oh Shit Snake?
Yeah.
And it's obviously a very special map, throttle map, combined with...
It's a very, very complex system, and you can't retrofit it. It has to be ordered from the factory, because some of the nuances are really special.
I'd love that.
I think it can talk, using the very latest in car technology, it can actually talk to the car it's about to hit to make sure that its alarm goes off if it's parked, because that's always a good signature of a cars and coffee accident, isn't it? Smacking into a Camry on the other side of the street and its alarm goes off.
Just to draw more attention
to the accident you've just had.
Or what about as you've engaged the sort of the Shelby line lock roulette, as it might be called, as you engage it, does it have a public hailing system from the back arches that says, "Everybody, start videoing this now"?
Yeah, start your camera phones and stand back.
And it's the ghost of Carol Shelby just warning everybody.
Do you know how stability control can just apply the brake of one wheel to drag a car back into line? This system, same technique, but it's doing it to push a car offline. So it's like, if it feels that you're not
braking,
flailing about and fishtailing wildly, it can just nip a front disc so that it just tucks the nose in to really flick that tail around for full and embarrassing loss of control on a public highway.
Hey, this could be the new... This could be the new pro rodeo. You know, watching pro rodeo bull riding. Have you ever watched it? It's insane.
Yes.
Where they have sponsored gear on, all the cowboy gear. It's incredible. It's like that, but with the Shelby Oh Shit Snake option.
Yeah.
I think it could be a thing.
It's
could
brilliant.
Be.
I don't know why we're putting this in the public domain. We should be in a meeting in Detroit right now.
We absolutely should be. But I think, going back to the actual thing that you talked about, which is the Bronco, which I remember from watching American football on Channel 4 in the 80s. I remember the guy that used to do all of the presenting for it, because for some reason in the 80s, American football gained a bit of interest in the UK. Mm. And I remember the Denver Broncos, and he always had a speech impediment, so that it would always be the Denver Broncos.
Really?
Yeah, playing the Cincinnati Bengals. And I always like the Cincinnati Bengals because I like the design of their helmet. Is that interesting?
I was going to ask you, because I feel like you understand American cars and American car culture a bit more than me. And I'm intrigued by the fact that you can take the doors off this new Bronco.
Yes.
Which obviously they've done because you can take the doors off a Jeep Wrangler.
Yes, I was just about to say.
Which seems to be its sort of its most direct rival.
Yeah.
But the Bronco's doors look like proper car doors. The Wranglers always look a bit old school, a bit sort of flimsy. You know, it's just a stamped bit of tin.
Like Caterham doors.
Yeah. Now, these Bronco doors look proper, and they've got proper door cards. You know, they seem like they are. I presume they've got side impact beams and stuff in them. Now, have you ever picked up a car door?
Yeah, they're really heavy. I've dropped
they're
one
really
on my foot.
Heavy.
Yeah.
Oh.
And they're quite sharp, obviously, when you take them off
the
car.
Yeah, they're just a pain. Now, I've noticed that the Bronco doors are frameless.
Yes, they are.
Which I gather is so that you drop the window and then it's just the lower door panel, and you, on the four door, you can store all four doors in the boot. Because they noticed, I read this thing, Ford engineers did an indication of the sort of background research they did before they committed to this car. They went and did a load of trails around the US, and one of the things they noticed was people with Wranglers would sometimes leave their doors chained to a tree while they went off on the trail, doorless. And they didn't...
Chained?
Yeah. Well, wow. I guess you don't want someone to nick your doors. Or
no.
They'd just be dumped. You know, they said that sometimes they'd just be there, lying there in the grass. And they didn't want that to happen for Bronco owners. So they said, we've got to work hard to make sure that you can carry the doors with you. So they that's what drove them to become frameless. But even so, they're still going to be bloody heavy. I mean,
no, they will
be. I'd
be
intrigued to know
be.
How much they weigh.
Actually,
but
frameless
question,
doors are harder to pick up as well.
Yeah, because there's no window frame, I know.
Yeah. It was a bit painfully practical to point out, but...
Well, I know, but my question is, and I don't know why I think you'd know the answer is, but why the bloody hell are they so obsessed with taking the doors off? I mean, you're just going to get really dirty.
I think it goes back to the...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
It goes back to the cowboy era of feeling like you're riding a horse bareback and you're being a bit more free. If you're off-roading in a... And this is mostly off-roading, it can be on-roading. It's that feeling of being closer to the edge of danger. But also in a doorless car, a Jeep or whatever, when you're off-roading, of course, your line of sight is much better for rock crawling. And
well, I did wonder if it was that. But, I mean, I thought if you've got the windows down and the roof off, you can sort of pop your head out of the side. I do get that, but...
That's why these sort of viewing screens indoors, which became really popular in lorries, didn't they? For blind spots for cyclists and pedestrians. So, you know, the lower part of a lorry door, often they have a window.
Yeah,
And they've had those now since the 70s in some lorries, I think.
Oh, so I wonder, that's the point of those other, the optional Bronco doors with the holes in them.
Yes.
They're a sort of halfway house where you can see out, but
yes.
You don't. Because have you ever driven a car with no doors?
I have, yeah. I've driven a car with sliding doors that you can leave open, which is really cool.
I find it very strange. Like, I feel self-conscious that people can see my trousers. It's just like, I don't... It's an odd experience somehow.
You definitely do need to wear trousers in a doorless car because otherwise you get yourself into a host of problems. You can't be shirt-cocking in that instance. I think that would be very unfortunate. Also illegal.
Yes.
Oh, I know what I was going to say. The when you were talking about the original Bronco being quite spindly... I think what Ford engineers or designers have cleverly done is they've just looked at every single resto-modded Bronco that's been done. And the first thing that people do is widen the track and put more balloon-esque kind of tyres on it.
Yeah.
And it just seems to make it a lot more handsome, doesn't it? And I suppose you could always make it skinnier. If you want it. And of course Icon do their Icon Bronco, don't they?
But even some of theirs I think still look a bit gawky somehow. It's like there's a press picture, one of the press pictures that Ford put out last week is of a yellow two-door Bronco parked on a beach with an original.
And yes, I've got that. I downloaded that image. Yeah.
And I think the original just looks really frumpy, and then you realise the new one, although it's inspired by the original, it's quite clever the way they've done it. Like, you know, the original has a flat front, it's absolutely flat.
It's totally flat, yeah.
The new one's sort of got an homage in the grille and the headlights, but it's got some curvatures at the front, like modern cars do. And it's got much more sort of curvatures to the sides, even though it's still quite flat side, and it's just a much better looking car.
I think the only person that isn't going to like the new Ford Bronco is going to be Land Rover.
Well,
and I think that's because obviously the Defender's being wheeled out as we speak. In fact, I saw one over the weekend in Norfolk.
Did you?
It wasn't Prince Philip, and
because it was on its wheels.
But I do think it could pose a serious threat to the Defender because it promises all this utility and, you know, the kind of fun and carefreeness and ruggedness, but also with just enough luxury and tech for you to go, oh, okay, yeah, I can live with that. Okay, yeah, I've got Ford Sync's infotainment. That's pretty good. That's solid.
Yeah, okay. From what I can gather, it's not short of tech. It's not a basic car. You know, it's got everything you'd probably want. And I do think it probably will give the new Defender a bit of a hassle in the US, because the basic Bronco, base two-door Bronco, is five or under $30,000, which is,
yeah.
I mean, the exchange rate's CAC at the moment, but that's still sort of 24 grand here. So
that's seriously cheap. We don't get cars that cheap, do we? I mean,
not a big old
4x4,
and it feels like also the basic one, like the basic Defender. When I was looking into how much kit a basic Defender's got on it, and it's actually surprising. It's got pretty much everything you'd ever want. It's
like
got cruise control and heated seats and stuff they usually make you pay more for. But
yeah,
the Bronco, I don't think it's that well equipped as a base model, although it looks ace when it's in base trim, ace of base,
it does.
Because it's got steelies on it. It's under $30,000 for a basic one. And then you can start playing tunes on the spec to your heart's content, just like the new Defender. But you know, the new Defender is
the new Defender's better, I think, because Land Rovers, as standard, are just more luxurious these days. Like you say, when you say I just want a base model Defender, it's not that base, is it? In fact, this week, I'm driving a Toyota Hilux single cab pickup.
Are you?
Yeah, and I asked Toyota for their entry level, so the cheapest pickup Hilux you can get. And it arrived, and they actually apologised to me and said, I'm really sorry, this one's metallic silver, so that is a 600 quid option, but apart from that, it's better. But it's sitting there on really...
We apologise for our decadence.
Yeah, honestly, and that is the only option. And it's just wonderful. It's got balloon tyres on nice deep dish black steel wheels. It's, like I said, single cab, so super long bed. But even in totally base trim, it's actually got quite a lot inside it, really. You know, and it's got, because of course these days it's cheaper to probably put electric mirrors in than manual mirrors, because nothing has manual mirrors anymore.
Yeah.
And it's got infotainment that's probably taken from a Corolla or whatever.
Going back to what I was saying about taking the doors off a Bronco, and I was like, God, I bet those doors weigh a lot. I mean, God, they've got electric window motors in them. And then I remembered that electric windows these days are lighter than the manual equivalent mechanism, because... When Lotus put electric windows in the Elise, you know, all the purists were outraged. Oh, you're losing the purity and the add lightness. And Lotus, I checked this with Lotus quite recently to make sure I wasn't misremembering it. The electric window mechanism was fractionally lighter than the manual system that it replaced. So, and the same with, I think, Renault and Peugeot and people used to, you know, like the 306 Rally had wind-up windows to sort of make the statement of how minimalist it was. But it's all bullshit. And Renault stopped doing it with the sporty Clios because no Clios had manual windows anymore. Even a basic 1.2 Clio had electric windows. So it was more trouble than it's worth to engineer a wind-up system just to sort of make a point about, look how committed to purity we are, because it's bollocks.
Mm.
Sorry, I just went off.
No,
on that.
I was just trying to think of the name of the electric classic Bronco project, which you can order in the States.
Oh.
It's the Zero Labs is the name of the company. It was on the tip of my tongue. And they do an electric old school Bronco, kind of reimagined. It's a beautiful thing, absolutely beautiful.
I think that's the main reason why the Bronco in its current form won't come to the UK or Europe, is because for us, no right-hand drive at the moment, but for mainland Europe, it would completely frig Ford's fleet emissions average.
Yeah.
Because it's got, the base one is a four-cylinder turbo, isn't it? And then there's a 2.7 V6.
That's right. So you've got 2.3 four-pot, 2.7 EcoBoost V6.
But it's a hefty old thing because it's a separate chassis and it's all steel and everything. So it's going to be, you know, CO2-wise, it's probably going to be pretty
thirsty,
high figure. And that will just absolutely, well, you know, it won't there won't be enough 1 litre Fiestas to offset that, and it's just not worth their while to do it, because, you know, everyone's worried about their fleet averages now. So that's why it won't come,
which is a shame.
But if they do get their finger out and do an electric one, then maybe that would change. But then would they want to just market an electric one when its target market is probably a little bit trad and wants...
Yeah, but give it 18 months, Rich. Give it 18 months after launch, and the Mach-E's already out there, and the early adopters, or the, you know, the frenzy of the Broncos been waved over them. Then you can go, well, hang on, let's just do what Ford used to be amazing at, and just combining their parts bins and cleverly cloaking them. Yeah, I'd love the EV drive. I mean, I'd love it if our Jimny was electric. I'd love it if the new Defender was available in electric form. I think it would just be fantastic, or even a, you know, very, very generous plug-in hybrid from launch. But
I think it's going to come, isn't it? But they're a bit screwed on the Defender, because it's largely based, albeit sort of loosely, on the current Range Rover platform, which is actually getting a bit old, and there'll be a new Range Rover on a new platform next year.
Yeah.
But they couldn't wait that long to do the Defender, and the new platform is fully sort of compatible with full electric or plug-in hybrid or all the rest of it, and that old platform, it's a bit harder to finagle the batteries in there. So it's the same thing. It's like, why, you know, why the Defender is, you know, 40 grand or whatever, and a Bronco can be under $30,000 is because Ford can twin it with the next Ranger.
Yeah.
And develop a bespoke separate chassis for it and do all that sort of stuff. Land Rover can't do it. Their only option was to pair it with the Range Rover and
Sports.
The Disco 5, and they're all expensive, complicated, all aluminium cars. It's like they couldn't ever sell the Defender down to a price much below what they've got it to. So it's a sort of different car, isn't it?
Yeah.
You can see where it's come from, but it's not completely beholden to its past. It just nods to the old Defender without getting too wrapped up in it.
Yeah.
The Bronco's more retro, and that's fine. I sort of feel like they've both gone their own ways. They're both nice-looking cars. Best of luck to them. But the range of options and the things that you can do to the Bronco, I did sort of think, that does make the Defender options look a bit unimaginative. Like, there's loads of options on the Defender, but I don't think they're quite as sort of broad and as interesting as we've done with the Bronco. Like, where all the grab handles are held on with Torx bolts, and you can replace them. You can start mucking around, take things off, put things on. You know, it's really, they've gone to town.
It's hands-on, which is what the Jeep Wrangler is in the States. It's just the Jeep Wrangler over here is too expensive, so people just go, nah.
Yeah. They just buy. Although, as a mate of mine, he's on his second Wrangler four-door, and the reason, he's a car guy, and he's had a series of 911 turbos and stuff, and he loves the Wrangler because he said it's the only sort of spacious family four-door that's also a convertible, and his kids just love that. You know, in the summer they just take the roof off and they zoom about. But the first thing he's done to both of the Wranglers that he's had is have them lifted and big wheels put on.
Because he wants the full monster truck flavour.
Yeah, he wants the look. Yeah. It's all for the look.
It is all for the look. I'm thinking of body lifting the Jimny. I haven't decided yet. And I also haven't told my wife, who owns the car, yet.
Don't tell her. Just one day she'll come out to it and go, why is it harder to get into now?
Yeah. Well, apparently it's stiffer, so it will address the sort of hobby horsing a little bit.
Oh, really?
But at the same time, it's not exactly required, is it? I don't really need to do it. Oh, I know what I wanted to talk about in this cast. wanted to talk about that that series on, is it Netflix? The basketball.
The Last Dance?
Last Dance, Chicago Bulls.
Yeah, we just finished that. It's really good.
I mean, basketball's the only game I play or have played.
What?
It's the only game I've ever properly been interested in, really.
Really? I had no idea.
Yeah. Well, I've played basketball fairly regularly since my early 20s. I stopped doing it for a long time. And my school never played basketball, so I was never like... I was never sporty as a kid, but I always liked basketball. And then I always wanted a pair of Air Jordans when I was a kid, but couldn't afford them. They were £100 in 1990. I remember that. I told my kids that. They sort of looked at me, and went,
"God,
they were £100 in 1990." I remember seeing them in the window of the sports shop and just thinking, "That's just unattainable. That's like a McLaren F1."
Hang on. There's an inflation calculator somewhere online. I'm going to find out what that is.
Oh, please do, just to rub my nose in it, yeah.
Well, no, because I think that's loads of money. I can't believe they were that expensive.
They were £100 in 90, and if I'm right, I think Reebok pumps were about £90. They were just underneath that with the little... Do you remember the basketball that you pump the tongue up with?
Yeah.
Those ones. So a friend of mine got a pair of those, and I had the Nike Air Max 90, which I was very proud of, the orange and white, and I... saved up for those and then got them as a birthday and Christmas present, I think, or something. And they were £60. So I think they were really expensive.
Are you ready for this?
Yes.
Today, or near as damn it, that £100 in 1990 would be, round it up, £230.
Wow.
That's a lot for a pair of daps, as they say in Wales.
For a pair of trainers possibly made in Vietnam. Yeah, that is a lot, isn't it? Whoa.
That's my favourite, one of my favourite gags from Flight of the Conchords. You ever watch Flight of the Conchords? And they've got a song about kids, slave kids making trainers. And obviously it's all supposed to be a joke. But it's got this thing where it goes, you're turning kids into slaves to make cheaper sneakers, but what's the real cost when the sneakers don't seem to get cheaper? How can you charge so much for sneakers when they're made by little slave kids? What are you, overheads? Anyway, that amazing stat from that series was about how, I think, I'm going to get the figures wrong here, but roughly they said Nike back then was not the big sort of sports behemoth that it is now.
It was quite a relatively small company. It was a young startup, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and they thought their target was something like to sell $7 million worth of Air Jordans in the first year, and they actually did $120 million worth. Something like
Sugar
that. They just absolutely
fairy.
Just went completely off the scale, and that was it. They were sort of rocketed into the big league.
Well, it was the guy that did that marketing deal is probably one of the most successful marketeers to have walked the earth. But what the reason why I wanted to bring it up in the cast is because, as you will have seen, I really kept chuckling when I saw Michael Jordan being shadowed by the camera crew. In his, was it a P38 Range Rover?
He did. In some of the archive, he had a P38. I think before that, in some of the older archive, he had a classic Range Rover, but an LSE, you know, the long wheelbase one.
Yes, it was an LSE, I think. Was it white?
I thought it was black.
Or was it?
I can't remember now.
The P38 made me laugh because it had the, I think it had the headlight guards and everything.
Oh, yeah, he'd gone accessory.
He had.
But given the P38's reputation for... Oh, actually, someone corrected me a while ago. People call them P38s, but technically, it was the 38A. And it was originally called the Pegasus. That was a code name for it. And then it became 38A, and people sort of merged the two.
Pegasus is a horse that can fly.
I know.
That's so apt.
A Range Rover that can go wrong. But
Air Jordan and Pegasus, that's like match made in heaven. They both fly.
But that I thought, you know, the number of times that he must have been late for training because his 38A was...
Can you imagine it just smouldering in the commuter traffic?
He had, in one of the later episodes of the documentary, they had some archive from towards the end of, you know, the glory days of the Chicago Bulls, and he had a Porsche 993 Turbo S.
Yes, I was about to bring this up. Yes, he did. Proper wide body. Ooh.
Now, that's at the time, I guess he bought it new and that was his car. And they were, I think they were quite expensive, weren't they? Because they were very limited.
They were very
expensive. Probably it was over $100,000, I would guess.
Yeah.
But that is now possibly a sort of, what, 400 grand car, something like that? They're silly money, aren't they? Absolutely crazy money, those cars. So he just shits dollars, Michael Jordan.
I mean, you can't knock the guy's determination, even when he's at the top. But I thought the fact that he had the number plate Air on his, obviously, air-cooled 993-911 Turbo S. Yeah. And I thought, hang on, if he turned up at one of these Luftgeokult shows, whatever they're called, devil worshipping flat six people, and then the Luftgeokult.
I always imagine there's a lot of Luftgeokult go to those things.
No, I've not been to one. I'd like to go to one, but I'd have to turn up in my Beetle. And lord it up in that sort of delusional way. I love the fact that he's got that number plate for Air. Obviously, he is Air Jordan, the leaping, absolute, unbelievable player. I mean, I knew he was an unbelievable player, but when you watch that documentary, even if you're not interested in basketball...
Well, no, I'm not. I didn't know anything about it at all. My wife, you know, is American, so she was aware much more than me of that whole... run of seasons in which Chicago Bulls were unstoppable, but I had very little knowledge of it, and I just found it fascinating.
Yeah,
I can't even put my finger on why. I think it's a good story and with good characters.
It's a good story.
Poor old Scottie Pippen, forever the bridesmaid, but so sort of, you know, so
amazing.
Stoic and so committed, and obviously a great player in his own right, but just he's not Michael Jordan because no one else is, and that's so he's always a bit second fiddle. But
in a way, I think Scottie's realised that not being Michael Jordan has its uses because he can live more of a normal life. You know, Michael had that thing of being hounded to pieces. And possibly never ever relaxing. Apart from the fact that I loved it in true 90s style. They would be running around and at the peak of their fitness, but they'd always have a cigar after a game. I absolutely loved that. And I love the idea of him also. He had a Corvette or several Corvettes. And
I just thought to myself, a lot of Corvettes showing up.
A Corvette's known for their leg room. I mean, Michael Jordan's not as tall as a lot of other pro players, I know.
But they were C5s, I think, weren't they? The ones, a lot of them, that are cropping up.
And yes.
I think that's when it got a lot bigger, didn't it? It was like, that's probably the...
Yeah.
I know some American listener will get cross with this, but I feel like that's the biggest the Corvette got. Because then it's sort of got more compact recently, hasn't it? And
I remember going on a German exchange visit with school, and one of the teachers at the German school was exceptionally tall. I'd say nearly 7 feet tall. And... I love the fact that I caught him one morning turning up in the school car park and parking up, and he was in a Renault 4.
Oh.
And because I was interested in cars and I was trying to practice my German, I tried to strike up a bit of a chat with him and say, what an interesting choice of car, you know. I realised at the time quite a lot of German people bought German cars. I said, why have you got this car? And he said, the simple answer is, it's the roomiest car I can find. And because it had such soft suspension, and he wasn't just 7 feet tall, he was a broad man, he was a big guy. He wasn't fat, he was just big. When he got in it, it genuinely sat down on the driver's side and drove lopsided out of the car park. It was just so good.
We should probably bring this to a close in a minute, but I did just want to say the thing I enjoyed about The Last Dance, which if anyone's listening and hasn't seen it and they've got Netflix, I would heartily recommend it, even if you're not into basketball or indeed sport.
That's true.
It's fantastic. But apart from the cars, the thing I enjoyed most about it and all of the archive footage from the 90s was the sheer amount of baggy linen suits. Unbelievable. And just when you thought you'd seen the baggiest suit you could ever possibly see in your life, the next shot, MJ saunters in and he's wearing a sort of tailored circus tent of linen with a double breast in lemon yellow. And you just go, holy mother of God, like you couldn't go out in a breeze in that thing. It would just carry you away.
What
so
those,
much baggy linen.
What are those squirrels that can jump from one tree to another and fly?
Flying squirrels,
Air Jordan turns into a flying linen squirrel.
the entire championship winning Chicago Bulls squad of the 90s could fly from tree to tree on wings of pure linen. Incredible.
There is
and
so
I started
much
thinking. So it was so much. It's like the linen industry in the late 90s. You imagine someone going to the boss's office and going, boss, I'm a bit worried that suits are getting a bit slim fit. No, nonsense. We're living in linen times. This will never happen. When Pierce Brosnan became Bond, he took in quite a slim fit suit to the role.
Yes.
And it was the writing on the wall.
There was no surplus fabric.
Absolutely not. He was like a pencil. He was just absolutely shrink-wrapped in immaculate tailoring, but no linen and certainly no MC Hammer crotch and just a jacket that sort of seems to go way below the arse.
Oh, I was going to say, the other thing is for those guys who obviously are in serious physical shape, if I had a physique like that, I probably wouldn't wear what looks like a sort of linen cloak over the top of it. It's funny you should point that out. It's really tickled me because both me and my wife looked at one another. We were watching, go, what the bloody hell's going on with the looseness of those suits?
The suits are too loose. What are you doing?
They're so loose.
But you forget. That was the 90s. I mean, the number of times that Michael Jordan must have accidentally shut some unspecified part of his linen suit in the door of his Range Rover LSE because there's just so much fabric.
Can you imagine?
You can possibly gather it all up. It's like a fucking wedding dress.
Mate, the thing is, he shuts the door and he can take three long paces before he knows his suit's caught in the door.
Also, let's be honest, the panel fits on a classic Range Rover. He could probably just then pull the linen through quite easily. But
just a bit of oil on it.
Yeah, it's just got road dirt on it, which is annoying because it's light salmon pink. So that's going to need dry cleaning.
I'm going to have to watch Last Dance again just for a linen suit tally because there's some unbelievable colours.
Somebody on YouTube needs to do a baggy linen suit supercut of just those moments from The Last Dance. I beg you out there, someone with time and the inclination, which I admit is quite strange, please do this.
That's probably tickled me there, has.
Well, this is probably a billowing light fabric moment to bring things to a halt. So thank you very much for listening to the Smith & Sniff podcast. We're here every week, every Monday morning, putting these out on all the usual pod places and on YouTube as well. But you probably know that because you're listening to this already. So if you're looking for other things to do, Johnny's Car Pervert channel has many, many treats on it. Videos involving, what's your latest one? Polestar, you've just done, haven't you?
Polestar 2, yeah.
If you are super, super bored, I have written a medium-sized book of very boring car trivia, which is available through Amazon as a paperback or an ebook. We will see you again next week.
Won't
oh, and
see
don't
you.
Forget to like and subscribe. We won't see you, but we'll imagine you.
And if you have any burning topics which you desperately want us to cover on this show.
Oh, God, yeah. We asked last week, didn't we? We've had a few good ones, and I forgot to mention that we'll do, maybe next week we'll answer your questions. How about that?
Yeah, less linen, more cars.
Yeah, if you wouldn't mind. Until then, like a flying fox with linen wings, we drift slowly away. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.
Michael Jordan being able to base jump wearing only a smart suit.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.